So I've been thinking a lot about a lot of different things, and I've kind of mentioned it here on the podcast, but one of the things is I've been taking this podcast, I think, too seriously and kind of setting it up super, well, formally, really. That's part of the reason why I decided to do away with my intro outro music, because I realized recently this isn't something I expect to ever make income from. It's more of a way to set things up so that I can kind of record my thoughts. And used to, I would just write blog posts about it, and that was it. And that was fun. It was kind of a journal, a daily journal or weekly journal. Although whenever I was blogging, whenever I was writing blog posts, I was doing it quite a bit more often. But more recently, though, I sort of realized that I'm not in this to kind of do the whole rat race of getting subscribers and so on and so forth. This is more for sort of a record, keeping things on record, recording my voice to keep it all, out on record. And then also, if you've noticed, if you pay attention at all to the website, you've noticed I've written some essays as well. But I've been taking all this way too seriously, I think. And so I'm gonna do this little episode just to kind of loosen up a little bit and talk about something I've been wanting to talk about for quite some time now. And that is, if you haven't noticed, I'm a little bit more obsessive with technological preferences. And that's because technology is so integrated into each one of our lives. Everyone seems to have a smartphone, which they call a supercomputer in your pocket. Everyone seems to have some sort of computing device in their life, and it seems to, well, it seems to be integrated so deeply in today's society, at least in the United States, and I know in a lot of Europe it's the same way. And there are a lot of people out there preaching the free software ethic, as it were. And I too buy into that free software, free licensing, all of that sort of thing. But I wanted to take sort of a moment to explain why. Because, well, so the whole reason why I got into free software, why I got into this whole movement, you might call it, or on LBRY or Odyssey, there is a documentary out there. I'm sure it's on others, but that's what I generally use, called the, I forget, it's like the Accidental Revolutionaries or Accidental Revolution, something like that. I should have pulled it up. I can't remember what it's called, but it's basically the revolution of the hackers versus the kind of big corporate types. And it all kind of started back in the, well, I think even as far back as like the 60s and 70s. But eventually, I think it all came to a head in the 80s and 90s, and which incidentally is when Linux was born. The whole concept by Linus Torvalds, or Torvalds, the whole concept of free software was born with Richard Stallman and everyone in his group, as it were. And I can't help but think what the world would be like without these people. I'm sure there would have been someone else, but these are the ones who have their names written in history now. And because of them, we have access to what's called free software or open source software. Software where you can see the source. And I think one of my favorite embodiments of that is the Suckless software people, suckless.org. Because not only do they have free licensing for their software, but they make software simple enough that anyone can pick it up and modify it. It's not like with KDE, for instance, the desktop environment and all of their different packages. You can't just pick up one of their pieces of software and modify it. not easily. Now, I know there are those out there that may be listening who say, you're such a noob. I can do it. I can pick up their piece of software. I can pick up, say, Kmail and modify it to run how I want it to, or how, you know, to utilize things that I want it to utilize. But for the average user, which is what I'd say 99%, if not more, of us are, because I am. I know Python. I know a little bit of C. And by a little bit, that means I've kind of dipped my toes into the pool of C, into the ocean of C programming, enough that I can recognize elements within code. But writing an actual program, that's a whole nother task for me. And I think I may have more knowledge than most of the people that I know on these things. And because of that, there seems to be a high wall, a high barrier of entry. Now, Suckless, they do something a little bit differently, where all of their programs are so incredibly simple, except for maybe Surf, the web browser, but that's because of what it relies on, which is huge monstrosities of code. But much simpler than others. So it's kind of a, you know, this or that sort of thing. But most of their software that they promote or that they've written is super simple. In fact, that's sort of part of their brand is Suckless, simple. I think DWM, their window manager, which is kind of like, well, depending on who you are, I'm just going to, for the sake of argument, compare it to a desktop environment like KDE, or although it doesn't have as many bells and whistles, but it's what you see whenever it starts up, the window manager. It draws the windows, it controls how things behave on your screen. It's the step up from being in a terminal, a TTY terminal. So with all of this, they've created something called DWM. I think it's their goal is to keep it under 2,000 lines of code, if I remember right. Or at one time I thought they said 1,000 lines of code, but I think, anyway, it doesn't really matter. They keep it very simple. And so to edit it, to configure it, you edit a configuration file. And whenever you look at this configuration file, things will jump out at you, especially if you've done any kind of programming, including like HTML. It's not exactly the same, but you'll see things jump out, and you can see that you can modify colors. Okay, that's nice. Then you can go to their website and see all of the different, like there's scripts, and then there's different modifications that you can make to it. Patches, that's what it is. All the different patches. And if you just look at those patches, they're easy enough to understand for most people, I think. So you can download it and then open it up with what I use, Vim, or you can open up with Nano or something like that. And you can edit it, or you can just look at it. And you'll look at it and you'll kind of see things that you know that you can change, and it won't break everything, or you think it won't break everything. But at least it gives you accessibility to that segment of the code. There's an ability to understand it. And I love that about Suckless. That's why I use so many of their tools. In fact, I use their window manager. And over time, I've been able to modify it little by little until I get it to where I have it where I enjoy it much more. But it's not so much about enjoyment, although that is an element for me, but it's usability. How is it usable? And I recently got into a conversation with some people about usability, and I feel like there is... So, for instance, I'll just put it this way. I've used Windows. I've used Windows all the way back to Windows 3.1, I think. I don't think I used anything before that. I'm not. I don't think I'm old enough to have used anything before that easily. But I used Windows 3.1 all the way up until Windows XP. Well, technically Vista. I did install Vista for about a month, I think. And that experience made me want to stop using it. And it wasn't because it wasn't pretty. It wasn't because it crashed at least once a day while using it, or froze up and you couldn't do anything. It wasn't because, the reason why I stopped using it was not because you would get that, the infamous blue screen of death about once a month with Vista. It was because a computer is something that you should be able to accomplish a task with. And I couldn't accomplish tasks, not very easily. I always had to meddle with it. And the same is true whenever I used, I switched to Ubuntu at that point. That's a whole story. I won't go into that. But I switched to using Ubuntu at some point long term, for at least a year or so. And Ubuntu was similar. So I used it whenever it was just GNOME 2, or like, you know, the original look and feel of GNOME. And I used it with that. And that was okay. That was good. Wasn't much you could change. It's the what we now call Mate variant. It was just a kind of a basic setup. But getting Wi-Fi was nearly impossible at the time. Getting half of anything working was nearly impossible, it seemed. For someone like me, who was a run-of-the-mill, I just want my computer to work kind of guy. And over the years, I switched around. I went to KDE. I found Slackware, which is how I found KDE. And at the time, it was KDE 3. I think it was right before they switched to KDE 4. Or at least the images that I found. I could have been, I don't know. I've done a lot of silly things over the years. But anyway, it switched from KDE 3 to KDE 4. KDE 4 looked pretty at the time, and but the problem was it became much less usable to me, I think. And I've noticed a trend over the years. So I eventually, at one point a few years back, I switched to something called Elementary OS. It was a beautiful operating system, a beautiful environment. But after using it for a month or so, I found myself wanting to tweak things, make things easier to use. But instead, I was sort of forced into using it how they want me to use it. And I became much less productive. I would run into things with systemd that just drove me up a wall. I'd run into errors that could not be fixed, just because I wanted to do one thing, and you are sent down a rabbit hole of trying to fix or find a workaround for a bug or just something that doesn't work how you expect it to. And I thought, well, systemd must be the problem here. I need to go back to what it was before systemd, what I've used before. Because in between Elementary and Ubuntu, I used Slackware for a couple of years, or three or four years, I think. And I never had that I never had any of these problems. The only reason why I switched was because KDE 4 just drove me nuts. It was usable, but there were so many flashy graphics and everything. It just felt like I was using a neon sign for my desktop environment. Everything was kind of nuts. And so I switched to Elementary. In fact, I think I used GNOME first, GNOME, the newer version 3, and then I went to Elementary because they had just come on the scene, and I used that for a while. I ended up using Elementary OS for almost 2 years. I supported everything they did. They came out with the App Center, and then the App Center for Everyone, which I actually have a hoodie for, of all things, and I have a couple of Elementary OS mugs that I had bought to kind of help support the project. But eventually it just became too much. Because I wanted to run a website from my computer, and doing so isn't that difficult, but there are certain things I wanted to do, and I wanted to use certain tools that didn't play well, or at least I would find issues, and SystemD would have some sort of a issue loading certain things, or, you know, I would have issues with that. And I found that my lack of control over SystemD at the base level, it wasn't because you couldn't find a way to control SystemD. Don't get me wrong. It had nothing to do with that. It was because what you needed to do to have the control what seemed almost out of reach, in a sense. It was so difficult to actually, for me, I should say, this isn't a blanket judgment of SystemD exactly. It's more the ease of control over it was felt impossible. And especially considering that I'd used SystemV init with Slackware for so long, and I knew how to edit those. I knew how to figure that out and make it work how I wanted it to. And it's just a constant... My story is a story of hopping around. Distro hopping, they call it. Jumping around, trying to find something. I used Arch for a while. I went back to GNOME for a while. I kept going back to Elementary OS for a long time. Because I just liked how it looked. It was so pretty. But then I would realize why I switched away. And it was always because of this SystemD problem. I always had problems with it. And, you know, some people don't, and that's great. But I always did. I always had issues that I knew how to fix if I just had SystemV init or RC init or one of the other. I knew how to fix it that way, and I wanted that on my pretty Elementary OS desktop. And by the way, I do recommend you use Elementary OS if that's what you like. It is a great distribution. A great operating system. However, it wasn't for me. And I eventually found something called Alpine Linux. Now, as a disclaimer, currently my main desktop I use Slackware on. But all my other computers run Alpine Linux. And the reason why I use Slackware on my main distribution, or my main desktop, is because I know how it works. It's not the prettiest right now, but I know how it works. Things work, and that's all I really care about. Eventually, I would like everything to run DWM, but right now I'm not ready to exactly take that leap with my desktop because I've had it running so stable for so very long with Slackware. No weird issues, nothing like that. So, but all of this whole story is to say that in the end, what I've kind of realized was computing isn't about how pretty your desktop is. Computing isn't about how many crazy weird things you can do with your desktop. It's not about if you can flex by only running in a terminal, everything in the terminal. Although I do enjoy that quite a bit, that's not what it's about. It's about if that is better for you or for your situation, for your ability, then that's what you should do. You should find something that allows you to do that. And for me, I think I'm beginning to realize that I think that if I could set up my main computer like I have my others, I'll have Alpine Linux with DWM for the window manager, if you even need one. Because some of my little servers, I just SSH into them and that's it. I've never connected them to a screen of any sort. But if for your main desktop or for your main laptop or what have you, all it needs to be is something that you can use that doesn't have issues whenever you're using it. It doesn't matter how pretty it is. It doesn't matter if you can use proprietary tools on it. It doesn't matter about any of that sort of thing. If you want, say, you want to be a photo editor, or you're a photographer and you want to edit your photos. Now, I know there are a lot of programs out there for Linux or Unix-like operating systems that people use every day, and they prefer them over things like Photoshop and all of these. Lighttable, I think, is one of them. All these different programs, they prefer them over these programs. And it's because they know them better, and they know how to use those programs better to accomplish what they want to accomplish. And that is what a computer is for. It's not something you should sit down and obsess over for days and days on end, which is what I have been doing for the past, I don't know how many years, obsessing over my computing environment. But finally, over the last 2 years, I've realized that I have found the right mix of what I want and what I need, where I sometimes don't even go to my computer at all for days on end, because I've been able to accomplish what I wanted to accomplish in a short period of time. But in the end, it's all about, can you get what you want to do done? And then whenever you're done doing these things, you don't need to interact with your computer anymore. Not unless you're just kind of poking around and say, I don't know, for my DWM setup, sometimes I'm looking at it and I think, it'd be good to have another tool up in my status bar to tell me, I don't know, the temperature of my CPU or something. And then I might spend an hour figuring out how to do that, and then I have it. And now it's tweaked a little bit, and now I'm more comfortable. But in the end, I can just go to my computer, get something done, and be done with it. It's not about, oh, by the way, I use Arch, as they say, or I use Arch, by the way, I don't know what the meme is, but it's not, I use Arch and I'm always messing with my computer. And if that's what you want to do, that's fine, that's great, do it. But if you're like me and you just want to sit down and be able to do something easily, quickly, and be done with it, then that's what you need to look for. And that's why, like, for instance, this podcast, I'm using FFmpeg, because you know what I realized was I was using Audacity. It's a good tool. It's a nice visual tool that you can see how things are, how it's recording and everything. But in the end, all I really need is for this microphone that I'm using to pick up some sound waves, put them on my hard disk in a way that can be played or played back, which in my case is an OGG file. Although I have been looking into Opus files, but that's another topic. It's an OGG file for now. And then I can put it on my website so that people can listen to it. And then I put it in the RSS feed so that people can download it to their devices easier. And that's all I need. I don't need fancy intro outro music like I thought I needed, because this is not a for-profit venture. This is just for me to record my thoughts, and hopefully someone will look at it and say, hey, I listened to this and I like your idea on this, or I don't like your idea on this, let's discuss this. That was the whole point. And I wanted it in like an audio format, because one of the things I do is I listen to quite a few podcasts, actually. I think I have a list of, well, to me it is, of like 6 or 7 that I listen to. And that's more than enough. That's more than enough. And, you know, whenever I found podcasts back in like 2007, I think it was, or 8. I don't remember exactly when it was. But I found it via this guy named the Tolkien, or he's named himself the Tolkien Professor. And I eventually actually attended classes at the university that he founded. It's an online university called Signum University. And I actually took some classes there just for the heck of it, because they're not that expensive in the grand scheme of things. And you can get something like college credit for it. In the end, actually, they actually have a master's program in medieval studies, or Tolkien and medieval studies, and which is really neat. I've been tempted to finish my master's degree through his university. But in the end, though, what really gets me is that he just sat down and he talked. That's it. He talked about the Silmarillion. He talked about the Lord of the Rings trilogy. He talked about all the different things that Tolkien studied. And he gave in-depth analysis. And I thought, you know what? That was so cool back then. That was the only podcast I really listened to. And it was only on iTunes, from what I understand. But it was so cool. I wanted to do that, to record my thoughts on topics that I enjoy. One of those topics is anarchist literature. And I don't go quite as in-depth as he does, or as he did. I don't have quite as much time on my hands as he had. He was a professor at a college at the time. And so he would basically just take his lectures that he had already written up and given and post them on his podcast. And so, but I mean, it would be cool. It would be neat to be able to just do this and that's it. But I don't know if that's like something I want in the future, you know, long-term sort of thing. But I did want to record my thoughts on, like, we read Emma Goldman's book on anarchism and Kropotkin's, one of his books, and all of these, The Conquest of Bread and all that. All these different people that I've always wanted to read, and I thought, why not read them? And then just record my thoughts about them afterwards. And now we're doing The Hero with a Thousand Faces, which may not seem anarchist, but it is sort of a humanist book, something to study the human psyche. And I really enjoy reading a book and sharing my thoughts on it. And now we are going more in depth on this, but I realized recently, like with the 2 weeks, well, technically 3 week break that I took, I realized that I just wanted to enjoy it, not go quite as in-depth on it, because I just don't have the time to sit down. I work 40 plus hours a week, and I have a lot of other things that I need to do, but I do want to get through the rest of this book, but kind of at a quicker pace, and then move on to other books that I have interest in that I actually haven't read. Actually, the next thing that we will be covering, I haven't actually read. And it's, I was going to leave it a mystery, but I'll just say it here. And we're going to read the Unabomber Manifesto. I don't actually remember what it's called, but I've always wanted to read it. And I've read the first parts of it. I've never actually read it all the way through. And I don't think it's that long, so it would be a kind of a fun one to do. And maybe we'll glean some sort of wisdom from it. Maybe we'll glean some sort of knowledge that we didn't have before. Or at least I will. I don't know about you guys. So I just kind of wanted to lay this all out there. This is why I'm changing things up. I'm simplifying my desktop. I'm simplifying my computing life to where all I'm doing is sitting down, recording something, and then doing the other things I do on my computer. Like I read the news and so on. Listen to podcasts as well. And I just kind of wanted to get that out there, and because I don't think I explained it as much in the previous episode that I just recorded yesterday, actually. So that's kind of all I have for now. If you enjoy this, if you have any thoughts on this, feel free to give me a shout out on Mastodon, and feel free to send me an email at anarchobookclub@riseup.net. And I'm Harag on Mastodon. It's dobbs.town/@Harag. So yeah, just shoot me a message. Mention something on Mastodon. You know, whatever you want to do. Oh, and that's also, by the way, this is why I'm not putting things up on Odyssey or PeerTube anymore. Because it got to be more, like, I ended up spending so much more time doing that than actually recording and reading and thinking through things. I just realized, you know, that's not what I wanted this whole thing to be. So, anyway, yeah. Thank you guys for listening. If you have any questions, comments, rude remarks, whatever, you know how to reach me. Go to anarchobook.club. You can find everything there. And if you do want to, like, I'm trying to experiment a little bit with Bitcoin and Monero. If you do have some that you have lying around and you want to throw some at me, even if it's, I don't know, like $1 or whatever worth of those coins, That's in my about page on anarchobook.club. So the web address or the wallet addresses for that. So yeah. All right, that's it. I'll wrap it up here. Thanks for listening.